Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, February 15th, 2017. With me today, I have Kelly Gaumont. And how are you, Kelly?
I'm doing well, Jeff. How are you?
I am good. And John Martellaro, how are you?
I am so excited. It's John and Kelly Wednesday. Yay!
You know, I'm pretty excited, too. I'm also excited we have a couple sponsors today. That would be GoDaddy and Blue Apron. So thank you to both of them. And I'm also excited to just like jump right into the topics. So that's what I'm going to do. All right. First up, we're going to talk about the right to repair. And what I'm talking about is or are bills that are being presented in several states that say that companies like Apple have to provide parts and repair manuals to independent repair shops and to just the general public, like if you wanted to fix your own iPhone or Mac. And so these bills are being presented, and Apple and AT&T and other companies are fighting these bills. And I'm curious, what do you guys think about that?
It sounds like right to repair is a good idea. It sounds outward reaching and affirmative and job creational and supportive of our customer rights and so on. It's all nonsense. It's balderdash, as Brian would say.
Balderdash, you say?
Absolutely. Why? Balderdash. Because, first of all, it impedes the design of the product. We like our products to be thinner. We like them to be exotic and technical. And if you were to design a product so that the user could go in there and tinker and change out batteries, it wouldn't have the same appeal and aesthetics.
Well,
second of all, when people go in and start tinkering, they screw up things.
Okay, so
ding!
First, there's
let me get my bill.
Apple designing a product for user repairability. That's different from saying Apple designs a product and then is required by law to make parts available to consumers and independent repair shops.
Well, that's what it is. It's a make-work project for repair shops who are trying to wiggle their way into a business they've been squeezed out of because of advances in technology. It's sort of like the typewriter repairman saying that you know, we want to make PCs illegal so we can preserve the typewriter repair industry.
I don't think that's it at all. I think it's for people who perhaps are looking to, like, there's a difference between I want to outlaw
that's
typewriter.
That's just part of it. I agree. That's just
or
part
I
of
want
it.
To outlaw yeah. PC. And there's a difference between I want to outlaw PCs and I want a book to repair the typewriters I have.
No, I agree.
More accurately.
Just making a general point, and there's more to that than that. People like to be able to do things like replace batteries. But as the article points out in Motherboard, people tend to be a little bit inexperienced. And when you have an Apple repair person who's fixed 25 phones a day for years, that's one thing. The first time a customer goes in and tries to pull a battery out and punctures it, they're going to have a nice explosion. And that's the advocates of repair legislation say, well, just put a label in there and everybody will be fine. But we know how people are about their system. And what's going to happen is that people are over their head. They're going to go in there and try to change things, make modifications, put the wrong batteries in. And then they go and get complained to Apple or go in and get upset because they made unauthorized changes that weren't covered under warranty. And then there's a whole mess. It's better to just design the product to be clean and secure and safe. And that's the way we're going forward in the future. And this business about printing repair manuals, it just smacks of the past. And the article Motherboard presents the arguments in favor as well, people know how to do these things. They know how to, unplug and ground themselves, and they know how to replace high density lithium batteries, but they don't. And it's just not a good idea for people to be tinkering around inside an iPhone or any other device.
But here's the thing, John, is that at one point, the person who now has spent nearly 10 years repairing iPhones every single day, That person started with one iPhone and didn't know what they were doing, but maybe was a competent repair person in other ways.
Had training from Apple before they started doing that.
No.
Yes.
No. I didn't. And I crack open iPhones on the regular. I crack open laptops on the regular. Nobody from Apple ever came and told me how to unscrew all those screws. Well, you That's not how it works.
Retail store.
Right. And I'm not talking about Apple retail store people. I'm talking about like my Apple authorized retailers here. Like I have MacForce, who's been doing Mac repair for 25 years. And I have other places. And then, you know, there's the shop in the mall that will replace the glass for you. You know, what I think this is for not necessarily say my mom drops her iPhone and cracks the screen. My mom has the option to bring it to me. I would like sort of certified official information on how to replace that glass to make sure that I'm doing it the way that I should be. Right now, what I have is excellent tools. Thank you, iFixit. And excellent repair guides. Thank you, iFixit. Because iFixit has taken it upon themselves every time something new comes out, whether it's Apple's or not, to crack it open and figure out what you have to do in order to whatever.
Making the case that you know how to do it is not an argument in favor of allowing the general population
And I'm not talking about the general population, because if the general population were so comfortable doing this, then the general population, then all of those kiosks at the mall that will replace your battery for you or replace the glass on your iPhone for you wouldn't exist, because everybody could go buy it themselves off Amazon and replace everything themselves. People don't want to, whether it's technical ability, whether it's time, whether it's effort, whether it's the patience to fiddle with all those fiddly screws. And trust me, they are fiddly screws. No, but a lot of people have no interest in doing that, nor do they have any interest in waiting all the live long day at the Genius Bar for somebody to help them.
Well, let's just make the argument that the repair shop should have the liberty to follow up on this repairability guideline. So designing the product so that they can be better repaired by these shops so that they can stay in business. We'll forget about the consumer for a second. So why should we impose on Apple, for the sake of these little repair shops who want to make money, why should we impose on Apple engineering constraints to design their product? It's already tough enough.
That's not what these bills are doing. They're saying Apple and other companies have to provide parts or sell parts and provide manuals. That's not the same thing as saying that you have to change.
You have to design it so that anybody that feels like can open it.
Right. And that's what I'm fighting against, the idea that you have to design the product so that the repair shops can replace parts.
And
that's a step backwards.
And there's nothing in these laws that specify that.
But that's the implication. That's the engineering implication on Apple.
Okay, so an implication isn't the same thing as an actual law. So I totally understand the implication. Now, that said, Kelly, I totally get why you want to have the ability to get these parts in these manuals, because you're competent and totally capable of fixing an iPhone or a MacBook or whatever. And John, I totally get why you are concerned about the law or these potential laws and the implications that come with them. And so I guess if this were a three-judge panel, I become the tiebreaker on the panel. And while I like the idea of being able to have easy access to parts for repair, I don't like the idea of these laws. And the reason I don't like the idea of these laws, it's kind of in line with your fear, John, the implication that you're seeing. And what my concern is that once we have laws saying that Apple has to provide parts to whoever, then we start seeing lawsuits where these companies and consortiums of independent repair people and just individuals start filing class action lawsuits where they claim that Apple is intentionally designing products so these other companies can't repair them. And then we end up with this whole litigation mess because Apple's designing the products the way they design them, and And I just don't like the idea of opening up that door. So I would rather have to deal with the annoyance of taking my iPhone to Apple when I break the screen, which, by the way, I finally broke a screen on an iPhone. I've had iPhone since the very first model, and I finally broke a screen. Side note, I'll no longer use Apple's leather case because it doesn't protect the part of my screen that broke.
How long did it take Apple to repair your iPhone?
I had an appointment at 4:30 in the afternoon, and I had my iPhone back at about 8 o'clock at night. I would have had it back earlier, except they couldn't get the new screen to calibrate properly, and ultimately ended up breaking the phone and gave me a new one. Which was great. They took care of me. But that's another potential issue. What happens? You replace your screen, and now for whatever reason you can't get it to calibrate, and now you're just kind of screwed. But the fact that I was able to get it repaired so quickly, because I dropped the phone, said the things that you say when you drop your phone, picked it up, saw it was broken, said the things that you say when you realize that the screen is broken, but the screen still worked. So then I launched the Apple support app, set up a Genius Bar appointment, and within 2 hours I was at the Apple store handing over my phone, and then later on that night I had it back.
It sounds like a very nice experience.
It was a very nice experience. And I loved that the Apple employees all wanted me to see the pictures of their cats on their iPhones, and we all got to hang out and talk. And, it was great.
So 2-1.
Yeah. So
the panel of judges.
Yeah, but I'm begrudgingly on your side, John, because I do love the idea of being able to fix my devices myself. So there we go.
For me, it's more about almost safety. You know, John was talking about puncturing batteries. I like the idea of being able to make sure that the battery I've purchased is, you know, semi-legitimate. I like the idea of, you know, the hard drive that I purchased or the memory that I purchased and being able to put that, you know, replace something that's bad in my computer. I like the idea of knowing that that comes from a source I recognize and not from a company whose name is in Chinese and I can't pronounce. I like the idea of Apple making that deal. Maybe Apple buys batteries from that factory, but I can buy that battery from Apple, or I can buy that hard drive from Apple. And I know, you know, it's sort of like the MFI program. I know to expect a certain amount of quality if it's something that I got straight from them. I can't guarantee that if I replace the battery in my iPod with something else, you know. Yes, I said iPod. I'm not sorry. I'm old school like that, yo.
Yeah, and I've done exactly what you said, yo. And I replaced an iPod battery with a third party battery, but I bought it from OWC. It's a company I trust, and so but the thing is, you and I
as a person who's been cracking computers open since the 90s, I'm pretty comfortable with. Yeah, I know to go to OWC. I know to ask my buddies at the AARs around here what kind of, you know, what their supply lines are like, whatever. I'm able to do that because I'm me and I've spent all this time doing this, whether anyone said it was okay or not. You know, right.
And that's how we roll. Yo.
Right. So I just wish that it was, I understand the point that you guys are making, but I wish that it was a thing that could just happen and wouldn't get abused. Because that's the thing is,
I agree.
I'm more worried about because people, and I know that that's always going to be a problem. And I know that, you know, if these laws pass, there's going to be a lawsuit because somebody's going to say, well, you know, because if anybody is under the impression we do not live in a litigious society, I invite you to go buy anything at any store that has a power cord and read the instructions that come with it. Because every one of those, don't use the toaster in the bathtub, do not iron clothes on body. Every sentence of those books came from a lawsuit that someone brought and won against a company that said there was no manual that came with the toaster that said not to use it in the tub.
All right. Hey, on that happy note, we have sponsors. I know. What an awesome transition into GoDaddy. So GoDaddy, they are the world's largest domain registrar. They have over 14 million customers around the world. They have over 62 million domain names that they're managing. And the deal is, what they want to do is give small business owners the tools that they need to get their web presence and their business online in an easy and professional way. So that's their goal. And what they're doing is offering online businesses 24/7 support and the tools they need to get their website set up and to get their websites running. And what they want to do is help you get your website up and running for less than you would be paying otherwise. And the way they're going to do that is by giving you a 30% discount off all the new products that you order from them. So here's what you need to do. You go to GoDaddy.com and pick out the stuff that you need. And then when you get to your checkout, there's a coupon code field, type in C. Let's see, what should you type? You should type TDO30. And when you do that, you're going to get 30% off your new product orders. And so it's a nice way to save a little bit of money. So that's GoDaddy.com. Use the discount code TDO30. And thank you to GoDaddy for being our sponsor. All right, now, other sponsor today is Blue Apron. And what they do is go out and find all the really good stuff that you want to eat or don't realize you want to eat, and then send it to you. So they go and find sustainably harvested fish. They go and find responsibly grown produce, and they're out hunting for really good stuff. And then they come up with these really interesting menus, and they put all this stuff together and then just send it to you. So it comes right to your door and you have all this fresh food that you can make into awesome meals. And the recipes are easy to follow and they're easy to use again. So you can go to the grocery store and buy the stuff to make a meal that you've previously made and really like. So what you need to do is go get yourself some free food. And the way you're going to do that is by going to blueapron.com/TDO, blueapron.com/TDO. When you go to that website, the first three meals off your order are going to be free. And you also get free shipping. So you get to save some money all the way around. You get to have some really awesome food. And you're going to try stuff that you wouldn't have thought to eat otherwise. But surprise, it's really good stuff. So thank you to Blue Apron for being our sponsor. And that's blueapron.com/TDO. Okay. So real quick before we wrap up, because we really are running out of time, there's this story in, I believe it was The Atlantic, at the end of last week that got a bunch of people all riled up. And it's about how Apple is failing because of their product quality. And so my take on this is that my take on the article is that they're saying Apple has done this nice job of creating these beautiful looking products, but they've made compromises under the hood. Therefore, Apple's not perfect. Therefore, their products suck. Am I interpreting this right?
You are. And the answer to that is what the scientists say. You know, we have a saying in science that just because science doesn't know everything doesn't mean we don't know a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Well, this is the same thing with Apple. Just because Apple doesn't do everything perfectly doesn't mean they don't do a lot of things very well and better than most.
I like the Macalope's official response, which was baloney, hogwash, balderdash, scattergories.
The piece, look at that. It actually got me a wee bit tongue-tied. It just seemed to me like a piece where someone was just complaining because Apple isn't making exactly the thing they want, which is just an inappropriate place sense of self-entitlement. I mean, Apple can't make the perfect product for everyone. What they can do is make a really well-designed product that serves a vast majority of people in a really good way.
And here's the other thing that I think a lot of people don't necessarily recognize. And that is, because we have this same problem with a lot of stuff. There's a huge difference between, it is a tool that I can use that I find useful in my own personal situation, and it is a tool that is easy to use that anyone who wants to use it can figure out, and having done so can figure out if they want to make it part of their own workflow or not. And I think that's a thing a lot of people don't understand. Like, the Touch Bar MacBook Pro is probably the latest example of this, where people said, I don't see it. You know, I don't see how it works for me. I don't care. Therefore, it's dumb. Like, that's right. Not, you know, or a bad decision or bad design. It's not bad design. It's really good design. People I know who have them and use apps that mesh well with the Touch Bar are really pleased about it. And so I think there's a disconnect between, you know, the stuff that we see like this. And by the way, if you're not reading the Macalope on the regular, you should be reading the Macalope on the regular. And the Macalope's takedown on this is actually one of the finer ones in my estimation. But
it is.
It's that, you know, like I remember when Steve Jobs came on stage, I was actually there, and pulled the MacBook Air out of a manila envelope.
Ah, yes, I remember that.
Super thin. Mm-hmm. It was super thin and it was super light and it had this ridiculous battery life. And I remember looking at that and going, that is an amazing tool. I'm really impressed with what they've done. I don't need one, but I can appreciate the people who have been huffing around this giant laptop because it's the only way that they think that they can get any work done, and having to make all these other sacrifices. And now they don't have to make any of those sacrifices anymore because they've got this new, amazing, unbelievably white, lightweight computer. And I feel like there's a lot of that happens now, particularly when it comes to Apple. Again, like I say all the time, I don't see this kind of criticism coming out against anybody else. Nobody's saying, you know, Lenovo is making terrible looking laptops. You know, nobody's talking about how the new Xbox, it only has a veneer of design. Like, people aren't talking about that. So I find it sort of frustrating that this kind of stuff only ever gets leveled at Apple. You know, it's the same sort of consternation at the end of every earnings call. Apple only made almost all the money, not all the money. What on earth are they going to do?
Well, if Apple did make all the money, then someone would complain and say they made all the money and they'd still need to make more.
Right. How long can it last is usually what we hear when Tim Cook does come on and say, yep, this quarter we did in fact make all the money. Then people go, well, how long is that going to continue?
Or the next quarter they make 1% less than all the money and, okay, so Apple's on the decline.
Right.
I have one piece of insight on this. I have a friend high up at Apple and was invited to write for a certain publication. And what they did was they tasked him with Agenda, since he was an expert. And they said, we'd like you to write an article about such and such. And he said, that's wrong. That's nonsense. And he said, well, write the article anyway. And he'd go, no. And eventually he stopped writing for them. So it could be that the editor Atlantic decided that he wanted to rip up a Fuhrer, and he asked somebody to create an emotional article that would, you know, get people excited and do this kind of self-indulgent, self-entitled article that we all know is bad and doesn't have any technical basis. But they did it anyway because the editor wanted to do it. And so that's what we got.
Yeah. It's very possible that's exactly what happened. Yeah.
It is.
All right. Well, on that kind of depressing note, hey, we're out of time. Kelly, thank you for being here today.
Of course, it was my pleasure.
It is my pleasure. And John, it's my pleasure that you are here too.
Well, thank you very much. Hey, bye, Kelly.
Bye, John.
Oh, you two are so cute. Hey, head over to GoDaddy.com and use the discount code TDO30 when you check out to get 30% off all the new products you order. And then also head over to Blue Apron, blueapron.com/TDO. and get the first three meals off your order for free, plus free shipping. Thank you to GoDaddy and Blue Apron for being our sponsor this week. And listeners, thank you for joining me. I do love that you are here every single day. Every one of you rocks. We'll see you again tomorrow.